Well, good morning. This is my first opportunity to publicly commend the Iowa Supreme Court majority for their decision supporting the definition of a felony as being an infamous crime. It confirms what is in the Iowa Code, and it confirms the longstanding practice in Iowa. Voting is a privilege that has been given to us as citizens by hundreds of thousands of men and women who have fought and died for our representative democracy. Restoring voting rights to Iowans who have committed felonies is something that I take very seriously as governor. So that's why I applaud the Iowa Supreme Court majority's decision that prevents a convicted felons from voting unless their votes have been restored. The process for restoring rights, however, we have worked very hard to simplify. A common sense decision really balances the rights and responsibilities. We have rights as citizens, but I had an eighth grade teacher that taught us we need to balance those rights with responsibilities of citizenship and respecting other people's rights. And when somebody has violated other person's rights and they've been convicted of a felony, and that felony requires them not only to serve time but then to also pay court costs, they need to have fulfilled that obligation. We have a huge problem in this state. $699 million of unpaid fines and court costs. Think of that. $699 million. That's almost one-tenth of our state budget in unpaid fines and court costs. 94% of those are criminal and traffic. And if you discount the criminal part of it, 71% of those are criminal. So that's why I applaud the decision of the court. This common sense decision does indeed balance the values and the rights of all of our citizens. And it does clearly give, and this is something that I think is important and sometimes is lost, it gives convicted felons the right to earn their rights back. And it's not a difficult process. To automatically restore the right to vote without requiring the completion of the responsibilities associated with the criminal conviction would severely damage the balance of rights and responsibilities that we all have as citizens. The vast majority of Iowans believe that we should have real consequences for those that are convicted of our most serious crimes, that is felonies. We do have simple misdemeanors, aggravated misdemeanors, and we have simple, serious, and aggravated misdemeanors. We also have sometimes people that are given deferred judgments. And sometimes people think they've lost their rights because they got a deferred judgment. But if they have a deferred judgment and they complete the probation or the responsibility, they never lose their rights. And so that's something that we pointed out many times when people have applied to get their rights restored. They never lost their rights because they got a deferred judgment. In April of this year, I ordered a review of all clemency applications and released a new one-page streamlined application for the restoration of voting rights. To restore those voting rights, felons must complete their sentences, pay court costs, and seldom there's a fine in a felony. Usually they get time rather than a fine, and fine if there is a fine, and then be current on their, and this is rare, that somebody is required to make restitution. But if they are required to make restitution, usually the judge gives them a schedule. And if they're current on their schedule, we also will restore their rights. Is all people have to do to get this one-page application is go to www.governor.iowa.gov. This one-page streamlined application reduces the original two-page application to one, and the number of questions is reduced from 29 to 13. So it's simple, it's easy, and it can be done without a lawyer. Additionally, it's important to note that felons do not even have to have their full restitution paid. If they're current on the schedule, we will restore their rights. And those people that have met the criteria, served the time, paid the fine, and if there is restitution being current on it, we've granted 100% of them their voting rights and right to run for public office. They simply need to be current in order to get this application approved. In addition to voting rights application simplification, we're releasing today a simpler form for individuals who apply for restoration of their firearms or for a pardon. Now, it's much more difficult to get your firearms rights restored. Those are also constitutionally guaranteed rights that are lost when you're convicted of a felony. But for application for a firearms rights, basically, I require that they not have committed a violent crime. So if you committed murder, armed robbery, forget it. You're not going to get your firearms rights restored because we're not going to jeopardize the safety of the public. But if you committed a nonviolent crime and a considerable amount of time has gone by, you can make application for that. And that form has been reduced from 5 pages to 2 and from 43 questions to 29. We also, in addition to asking these questions, have a full DCI investigation. And I do a personal interview of all people that are considered for firearms rights or for a full pardon. The new streamlined application is much more clear, organized for applicants, and provides complete and simple instructions. At the same time, the questions on the application ensure that the public safety is our paramount consideration. The applications for a pardon and restoration of firearms can be found on our website as well. I encourage all eligible Iowans who have committed felonies to visit the website and begin the process of restoring their rights. If they have any questions, Larry Johnson on my staff is the legal counsel, and he can answer any questions people might have. I think it's important because there's a lot of confusion about this, and I think it's important for people to know that there's a clear path for felons to get their rights restored if they have met their responsibilities associated with the crime that they've committed. And felonies are very serious crimes. We'd open it for your questions.
How do you prove
your current fines? That's very simple. The records are there. I mean, so we just check with the clerk of court's office.
They have to go to the clerk of court and get that document.
No. There's no document. They make that application, and
the financial
history is
on
iowacourts.gov. So it's online. What did you say?
Iowacourts.gov.
Iowacourts.gov. It's record. It's public record.
We work with them. If they have difficulty obtaining it, we work with them to find it and submit it with their application. We work with all voting rights applicants.
Yeah, we try to make this process as simple as possible. People don't have to get a lawyer. It can be done in as simple as possible. But we also want people to know that if they have committed a serious crime and they have violated other people's rights, they can earn their rights back by meeting the obligations that they have under the conviction.
Is it the same standard for being current on your restitution for firearms as it is for voting rights?
No.
Why not?
Well, firearms has a much higher standard. For firearms, first of all, we're not going to consider it probably for a much longer period of time. Just completing your term is not going to be enough. We probably have to be at least 5 years beyond that. Plus, we're going to make sure that the crime doesn't have any violence associated with it. Plus, just to double check, we will do a full DCI background investigation to make sure. We'll visit with the co-workers and neighbors and everybody else. because the safety of the public is really critical. And that person has lost their firearms rights, and we want to make sure that they're a very good prospect and they're not somebody that's likely to be involved in any kind of violence in the future.
Will they have had to have paid up on what the court has said is their financial obligation?
Well, they will have to be current, just like, yeah. And we expect people to meet their responsibilities in order to get their rights restored. That's the balance. Justice is a balance.
You expect, according to the press release, about 100 applications for firearm rights restoration. You expect to meet and personally interview that number every year?
Yes, I interview every... Okay, so let me go through the more detailed process. So for firearms restoration or for a pardon, these are much more serious, and we're concerned about public safety in those to a very great degree. So first thing is they must go before the parole board. And generally speaking, if we don't get a positive recommendation for the parole board, I'm probably not going to consider it. If the parole board makes a positive recommendation, then Larry and Colin will come to me with it, and they will share that information. And then I will determine whether I think that the individuals, well, they'll give me the parole board's information, positive or negative. I'll look it over, and then we'll determine who should be granted an interview. Well, dozens of them.
Each year, less than 10 or less pardon firearms for each year, and the governor submits a report to the legislature every other year.
10 or less.
Yeah, well, it depends upon the year and whatever, but we have this process that we go through, and so. And I've done this every year that I've been governor. I did this in the 80s and 90s as well as now. I've always taken this responsibility very seriously. It's one of the extraordinary powers that's given to the governor, executive clemency. It involves also commutation of sentences. It involves pardons. It involves firearms. And we want to make this process as simple as possible, but we also want to assure the public that we're going to be very thoughtful and very careful, and we're going to protect the public safety as a paramount consideration.
Do you have any estimate in terms of more applications that you're expecting because you're streamlining this process?
Well, what we're trying to do is get the word out so that people know that this is not a complicated process, and if they want their rights restored, they just need to meet their obligations, having served the time, having paid the court costs associated with the crime, or fine if there might have been, or a restitution if there might have been, and those are pretty rare. But the point is, we have a huge amount of people that are not meeting their obligations, that are not paying their court costs, and that really breeds disregard for the law and to the responsibilities of citizenship. And we want to do everything we can to let people know that they can. In fact, there was a woman that recently wrote a guest opinion that was in the Cedar Rapids Gazette that made it very clear. She had, I guess, multiple felony convictions and found that the process was simple and fair and got her rights restored. He is intending to come, first of all, I think he's a great governor, and he's got background having served in the Congress before as well. He's one of many, I guess, under consideration. But, you know, I've always said I'm kind of partial to governors. And we're doing some things to support his reelection as well. So this is I did for Governor Walker when he had the recall issue. And so I try to help my colleagues when I can. Well, I'm raising some money for him, let's put it that way.
How so?
I'm doing it here. I'm calling some of my friends to say this is a good governor who's up for reelection and this is a important state and encourage him to support him as I did for Governor Walker when he had the recall a few years ago, and that was very successful. We're hopeful we can be helpful to Governor Pence as well. I don't know. I don't have any inside information, and I don't know any more than you do. You know, who do you think is going to be the pick? I really don't. I have no inside information.
Doesn't work for him.
No. My son doesn't have any inside information, or if he does, he's not telling me. Well, you know, we have governors-only sessions, and so I'm sure that will be a topic. And governors take the responsibility of protecting the safety of their citizens very seriously. That's why we've had concerns about a number of issues involving public safety, and I'm sure there will be discussions about that. I'm really proud of the way our law enforcement here in Iowa have handled things, and I think everybody needs to be treated with respect and dignity. And I think we all need to recognize that if we are stopped by a peace officer, we need to be compliant and follow their instructions, and hopefully that can avoid problems.
I guess in that same regard, what role do you see, what do you think is the role of governors in addressing these types of issues regarding police brutality or public safety?
Well, first of all, governors have a very important responsibility protecting the safety of their citizens. I take that responsibility very seriously, you know, and I've gone to the funeral of three peace officers from Iowa in the last year. One of them was working in Omaha and when she was killed, and then two in the Des Moines Police Department. It's always a tragic thing because these are very dedicated people that risk their lives every day to protect our safety, and to see them assassinated as they were in Dallas is unforgivable. And I just think we all as citizens need to try to do what we can to respect and appreciate the tough job that they have. And I know that we're always looking at ways that we can improve the training and prevent tragic incidents like have occurred in New Orleans and St. Paul and other places. I'm not going to get into that, really, because, first of all, I don't think he's going to call and ask for my advice on that anyway. And secondly, it's like picking between your children, you know. Which one is your favorite? I think you can – and there's – in addition to governors, there are many other people that I think would be good. You know, Senator Joni Ernst, because of her background in local state government and because of her military experience. I think she's an outsider that's gone to D.C. and been very well accepted and has provided significant leadership. But, you know, there's a lot of other people out there, too. Generally, the governors have been very collegial. and have learned from each other and worked with each other, gotten each good ideas from each other.
Is it getting worse,
though? The whole political environment has gotten more polarized. But governors generally, because they are the chief executive and they are the one that's responsible at the state level, take that responsibility seriously. I'll give an example. Many of us have dealt with natural disasters, and that's an issue that can make or break a governor. A good example was Hurricane Katrina. Basically, Governor Blanco in Louisiana messed up, and she was gone. And on the other hand, Haley Barbour handled it very well in Mississippi and was overwhelmingly reelected. So I went through that in 1993. You know, and went through some difficult times in the early 90s, and I think the way that we handled the flood of 93 and the coordinated effort that went on to help people as a result of that was actually helpful. So I remember going to Nashville in 1984. Lamar Alexander was planning something called Homecoming 86 in Tennessee. We thought it was such a great idea that we copied it. Now, I don't know that people in Iowa knew that we copied what they did in Tennessee, but we had Homecoming 86 in Iowa, and it was a great, real uplifting thing, and it brought people back that grew up here and was at the depths of the farm crisis, and I think it was instrumental in helping raise the spirits of Iowans and help us recover from a challenging and difficult time. So, yeah, you can learn from each other, and these things are very beneficial. I've worked with my colleagues across the aisle on a number of things. Governor Nixon and I have been strong advocates for the renewable fuel standard and stood together on that. I've worked with colleagues, especially on renewable energy. I'm working with the Democratic governor of Rhode Island right now on the governors that are advocating for wind and solar energy. And so we do work together on a lot of things. There are sometimes issues that we can't get consensus on, but for the most part, we try to work through the National Governors Association to see what kind of consensus, and we're particularly interested in federalism issues and concerned about protecting the rights of the states and the responsibilities that we have under the 10th Amendment to prevent encroachment by the federal government on what our state or local responsibilities. Not particularly. I'm the co-chair, and I was just reappointed as co-chair of the Governor's Council that advises the Pentagon and the National Guard and Homeland Security, and that meeting will be held on Thursday at Camp Dodge. And we're very proud to be able to host it there. Obviously, there's big reductions going on in federal military, and we have tried to respond in Iowa with our Home Base Iowa program to make it clear that we're welcoming people coming out of the military here, and we've got some good incentives on that. I don't see that as being particularly contentious. On the past, we have had some issues, but I think those are being pretty well resolved, and the collaboration now between the Pentagon, between the Pentagon and the National Guard and the governors is improved dramatically in the time I've been on there. Opioids, another issue, but again, I see potential for a good bipartisan support on that. I expect this whole violence issue and the attack on police will be something that governors will probably address in the not in the plenary session, because it's not on the agenda for plenary session, but probably in the governor's only luncheons. Well, I don't agree with that, and I guess that's his decision.
You don't agree that he should have a flag?
Well, I guess people have a right to display whatever they want to, but, I'm proud to say that we're on the side of the Union, and we won the war. And I've been to Vicksburg, and I will say that I think our relationships have improved dramatically. I'll never forget when we were in Vicksburg for the rededication of the Iowa Monument there. The folks of Vicksburg, gave us a much warmer reception than they did during the Civil War. I will say that. So I think we've come a long ways. I understand we still have a ways to go, but I'm real proud of the fact that we just honored the Littleton brothers, six Iowans from Louisa County that all died in the Civil War fighting to preserve the Union. So we have a proud and history of that. And I respect the fact there are people that, for historical reasons want to recognize and respect those that fought for the Confederacy as well. But this is about as pro-Union state as there ever was. We had a higher percentage of our population fought to save the Union than any other state, 13% of the whole population. The governor of Iowa personally recruited a lot of those troops. We just honored one of them whose grave was restored at Woodland Cemetery, Governor Merrill, who personally provided a lot of uniforms for the troops and then was wounded himself and donated his entire pension to help other wounded soldiers. So that's the tradition and history I'm proud of in Iowa. Yes. Welcome back.
when you go to the national convention, there are some Iowa delegates who don't presume yet that there's a presumptive nominee.
Seems like a contradiction in terms. So.
What's going to be your message about not being mutineers?
Well, my message is we want to preserve the Iowa First in the Nation precinct caucuses. And that's a paramount consideration to me. It's been a good thing for Iowa. Iowans take that responsibility very seriously. We had a record turnout for the Republican caucuses. You know, the caucuses and the primaries are over. I think it's pretty obvious that Mr. Trump has enough delegates to be the nominee of our party, and we need to unite and support not only him but the entire ticket, Senator Grassley, our congressional candidates, our legislative candidates. It's an important election. A lot's at stake. This country cannot continue to go deeper in debt. We need strong leadership that will restore America's greatness, and this is our best opportunity.
The other thing is, did you ask the Civil Rights Commission to rewrite the wording as it relates to churches and the exemptions that they might have to that act, since it hadn't been rewritten since 2008?
No, I didn't ask them to change it. But I support the action that they took. I think they wanted to clarify the law and make it clear that they have no intention of going after people for exercising their freedom of religion.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.